Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the UI Breakfast Podcast. I'm your host, Jane Portman, and today our awesome guest is Ekaterina Solomina, creative director, TEDx speaker, and co-founder of Future London Academy. And we're going to talk about design education. This episode is brought to you by the new season of Wireframe, a podcast by Adobe about how UX can help technology fit into our lives. Hear from designers and design leaders who have built UX and UI experiences for major companies and learn how design impacts your everyday life. To check out the show, just search for Wireframe in your favorite podcast app. Hi, Ekaterina.
Hi, Jane. How are you doing?
Doing great. Thanks so much for joining us today. You have a pretty fascinating public profile, a great school. And why don't we start with your background story? How did you end up being head of an academy in London?
Oh, thanks. Thanks for the compliments. I mean, it has been quite a weird story. I was born in Russia, same as you, and in a cold town called Yekaterinburg, next to Siberia. For my British friends, that's how I explain it. I studied physics and math and ended up doing programming, doing C and C++. I studied that at uni. And then eventually I realized that's not actually what I want to do. And I quit my uni to move to design. And I remember the first day I went to the university and everyone was very like colorful. There were IMAX everywhere. There were Wacoms. I remember it felt like going to Disneyland or something. It was just so cool. And I realized, yeah, that's what I want to do and that's what I want to be. So I studied design, worked as a freelancer, worked as web designer, worked in lots of different roles. And after being in what was called multimedia design and web design for a while, then I moved into branding and graphic design, and then weirdly ended up in advertising. I worked at Lower, like the advertising agency, as an art director. And then 12 years ago, I moved to London, and that's where I had a chance to work with Michael Wolff, the founder of Wolff Olins, and worked on lots of branding projects, and eventually ended up a creative director. And suddenly all my previous experience in programming, in advertising, in graphic design, in digital design kind of started making sense because I needed to lead a multifunctional team. And I was the only one who could talk to developers, who could talk to designers, who could understand marketing and advertising and all the numbers. So it actually worked out quite well. And now I lead Future London Academy that we started 7 years ago. And I suppose it came from my own pain throughout this experience that there was not really a place to learn when you already know quite a bit. So if you're quite senior in the industry, there is not really a place or a course that you can do to get better. And I wanted to create a place like that. So we did. That's what we did.
So you've been doing that for 7 years by now, and you must have polished your format really well by now. Can you give us an overview of what kind of courses you do and what's your special sauce?
Sure. I mean, when we started 7 years ago, we had no idea that FutureLand Academy will become what it is right now. We just wanted to have fun, meet cool people, and learn something new from all the amazing agencies that are based here in London. So we started with this 1 week experiences where people from all around the world come to London and they meet all the best people in the industry. We go to each agency every day and we learn from their teams, from their creative directors. And it's quite amazing to be in the space and to learn directly from the source. And essentially that's what we started with. And we had different programs focused on different topics. So we have one on UX and digital design. We have one on branding. We have one on innovation. And yeah, it was amazing experience just meeting people and building those networks. And I suppose that's kind of the power of London, that the community is quite close. So it is very special feeling when you suddenly get into that community and get behind the scenes of everything that is going on and spend this week immersed in everything London has to offer, while being in a group of 30 other people from around the world who also work in design and want to learn something new. So this was what we started with, this kind of 1 week experiences of full immersion into London design life. And after that, we got lots of requests from companies that they actually want to do that for their own teams. And if we could build custom programs for them based on specific topics. And we started building programs like that for Mars. And now we're working with TikTok. We're working with a lot of amazing companies creating one-day experiences or two-hour experiences for their teams to that are focused on specific topics. And what happened in the last year is something very, very exciting for all of us, because we launched our new program, which is a first one-year program at FutureLand Academy. And it's an executive program for design leaders, which is essentially a next step in our journey as FutureLand Academy. And essentially that came from, again, our own pain and the stories that we've heard and my personal story of getting to the creative director level when you actually know design very well and you know your craft very well and everything else you kind of learn on the go, how to lead people, how to manage the team. But at some point you end up in board meetings and in talking to your CFO or finance team about topics and subjects you not necessarily know everything about, like budgeting and strategy and lots of other things. So we wanted to create a program that bridges that gap for people leading in design so they can achieve better results and they can lead their teams better, as well as they can create better products and services. So that's our latest program that is all focused on finance and operations and business skills, as well as leadership and management for creative directors.
That's super impressive. And you have 200 plus amazing people from the industry. And I think you mentioned that one of the principles is that everybody's a practicing person. So everybody's actually working in the industry. So it's deeply, deeply practical.
Yes, absolutely. I think I always had the belief that you can only learn from people who are doing things. And I learned the most of everything I do in my life through the jobs that I had. And I was lucky enough to work with some of the most amazing people. I already mentioned Michael Wolff. I also worked with Donatella Versace. So I was very lucky to be surrounded by incredible, inspiring, fascinating people. And the university system wasn't really built around knowledge. It was completely broken. So whenever I was trying to learn anything through more traditional education, I was realizing professors there haven't been in the industry for 20 years and have no clue what they're talking about. So when we were building FutureLand Academy, we wanted to create something where you learn directly from the source and learn from these inspiring people who are doing great things right now. And then I actually read Nassim Taleb's Skin in the Game book, which only confirmed my theory that if you don't have skin in the game, then you don't know what you're talking about. And unfortunately, our society currently is built on a lot of social constructs where people who don't have skin in the game are in charge, whether they're governments or whether they're educational institutions. So to give an example, professors who teach you at university have absolutely no return or no benefit from you doing well in life. Their salary won't go up, their prestige won't go up. So they couldn't care less if actually you'll become a designer or not, you'll become a successful leader, you'll start a company. Their life won't change. While if we think of an older model of education, of apprenticeship, so if you get an apprentice in your, I don't know, bakery or whatever you were teaching, you want someone junior to become good at baking bread because you want them to bake bread well for your bakery. So therefore, of course, you will teach them exactly what you do and how it should be done, not some absolutely irrelevant skills. Because you have skin in the game, you have a lot to lose. If they don't do things well, then no one will come to your bakery. Your bread will be absolute crap. So current model, unfortunately, is not structured around that way. And essentially, we wanted to make sure that we step out of that model and create a more holistic environment where you learn directly from people who are doing things, who are interested in hiring you, who are interested in collaborating with you, who want to give you that knowledge because they want you to be part of their teams And we collaborated with people from Amazon, from Spotify, from Innocent Drinks, from Wolf Orleans, the Haha Did Architects, like incredible, incredible companies who are building curriculum with us and who are teaching their curriculum as well. So it is quite amazing. I mean, I'm very lucky to be part of that experience. And I have to be honest, I built it for myself so I can learn a lot of new things.
We have quite a few questions for you on the agenda today. And one of my first ones is that learning design, instructional design. We have an episode about that actually in the archives. I'm going to link to that in the show notes. But generally speaking, what are your key takeaways from so many years in education? What do you think works in education and what doesn't? You kind of answered that a little bit, but what specific techniques do you find the most effective, especially in design?
Sure. I think one thing that I mentioned already, skin in the game and just learning from people who do it, but also there needs to be this balance between abstract knowledge and concrete knowledge. And essentially the whole instruction design is always based in giving a model that you can understand, then showing how this model works in practice, then practicing that so you see what doesn't work for you, and then coming back with more questions and reflections on that. So what it means in real life that we every person that we collaborate with, whether it's CEO of a company or whether it's a creative director, executive creative director of amazing companies like Droga5 or Wolf Orleans, they will always teach through the fact, like first explaining their approach. So what's kind of the key strategy in their approach? What is the framework that they use or the process that they use? Then showing that in practice through the case studies of how they actually apply, and not in a high level, but in a very, very granular level, how many days it takes, who is involved, what goes wrong in the process, like really, really going deep into how that works in practice, then giving an opportunity for everyone in the room to practice that. So whether people want to bring their own challenge or whether in our executive program, there will be lots of case studies from these amazing companies that everyone will be going through. And again, kind of understanding how you would apply this approach or this particular framework, and then finishing with reflections. Okay, this works, this doesn't. How can I do it better? If I have to apply it in my situation next time, how would I do this? So that kind of constant loop of like understanding the model, understanding the case, practicing it and reflecting on it, that what needs to be happening constantly and based on real things, not abstract cases from the books that happened 50 years ago, but what's happening right now in the industry, challenges that companies face and how they solve them. That's what makes it amazing. So that's kind of the main model. But in general, I suppose our main principle is making sure that people leave with something practical they can apply. And there is no point in wasting anyone's time teaching something if they're not going to do it. And I've been to so many courses that promise you to teach something only. I keep taking financial courses. I think that's my secret passion, to learn more about finance. And every time I end up with a lot of words that I learned and no way to apply them, or a lot of some sort of abstract cases or frameworks that I don't know what to do with them in my personal experience or in my company and in my situation. So essentially staying away from this very, very abstract approach and making it practical so people can apply it, and also learning directly from people in the industry, I suppose that's kind of the main thing that we believe in.
There are so many levels to the design education, and I always find this disparity quite frustrating. For example, you know, you are self-taught, I don't know, logo designer, web designer. You decide, I want to be like those people on Behance, you know, who have amazing case studies and wonderful clients. So you decide to take an art class, design class, and you come in there and they teach you like rhythm and proximity and other things which have nothing to do with what happens in real life. And like these three layers, kind of academic learning, then everyday life when you design 5 pages for your client, and this amazing like high level, they just don't touch. Do you make them touch in your courses?
Absolutely. I can feel your pain. And that's exactly like what we believe in. And I suppose there is also, it's very interesting that you mentioned that, because that's where we started with as well. That was my personal frustration there. Everywhere you go, it's very theoretical. It's kind of big things that you don't know how to apply, how they link to your personal practice. And then it's very easy to swing to a completely different side of it where you get stuck in every day and you can't see the bigger picture either. So if someone tells you like, this is how I solve this, this is how I solve that. You now know how to solve exactly that in exactly the same circumstances, but you don't have a bigger model also how to solve it in a different circumstances. So that's also quite important to implement in any sort of educational program and architecture, to make sure you don't get stuck in like very small details. You also step out of it occasionally and show, okay, this is how you apply same approach, not just to this situation, but all the other similar situations. So I suppose, yeah, the balance between the two, the kind of the granular and the big picture.
And as we grow as designers, it becomes clear that the design knowledge is not sufficient to move on. And modern design leadership includes way different knowledge. So how would you describe this kind of knowledge, and how can a mere mortal get that knowledge if they don't go to your school? Are there any other ways to learn and to master that?
Oh, absolutely. I think learning should be everyone's priority in life in general. And our own motto is never stop learning. And I so believe in that. And I mean, I'm obsessed with learning. I read so many books. I take, I don't know how many courses a week. I'm just obsessed with learning new things. And it comes from a couple of places. First one is curiosity. And I think that's a skill that we all should nurture. We all have it when we are born, but we somehow forget about it throughout our life. And if everyone could, after this podcast, do one thing differently or better, it's be more curious. Seriously, it will solve so many of your problems just by being curious. First of all, it makes you open to things that you don't know how to do. And instead of ignoring them, you kind of try to figure out how to do them. And that's actually, I learned that from Michael Wolff, my big hero. He always says that curiosity is a muscle and you constantly need to train it to be better. So if we approach life through curiosity, and instead of when something doesn't go right or doesn't go our way, we become curious about why that happened rather than have any sort of other emotional reactions, we have much better mental state, as well as we learn constantly throughout our life. So never been stuck in a situation where, like, I know everything, I don't need to do anything anymore and don't need to ever learn anything because I'm so good, I'm this executive creative director in the biggest company in the world. That's not the right mindset. So being curious is definitely one approach that will take you so far in your life. And just being curious, you will start talking to people, you'll start asking better questions. Instead of arguing and trying to prove why you're right, you will start being curious why you might not be right in arguments. And that's another great skill that'll help you with communication, with, again, leadership, management, and all this, is just being curious about other people's opinion and what people think. So curiosity, I suppose, is the answer to being better. And two books, I recommend two books as well, that, again, changed my perspective on learning completely. One of them is Mindset by Carol Dweck. I recommend it all the time. I'm obsessed with this book. I suppose, as with every book, it needs to come at the right time. So it definitely came at the right time for me. And essentially, the concept is very simple, that if you have a fixed mindset where you feel like you're good at certain things and not good at other things, and that's genetical and you can't change it throughout life, then you achieve much less than you if you have a growth mindset, which kind of believes that you can get better at anything, like literally anything, even if you're super bad at maths and you've been bad your entire life. If you start practicing it a bit more, you'll slowly start getting better. My personal belief was that I'm very bad at business. I'm a very creative person. I'll never be good at business. Turns out you can be. If you practice, you fail, you learn, you'll get better. And you're just constantly believing that you can be better actually makes you better. Very simple trick. It works. So that's one book. And the second book about learning that, again, I read recently and changed a lot of things for me, is called Peak. And Peak is actually talks about sport and peak performance in sport, and what do we need to do to achieve that peak performance. And I was going through my personal struggle in the gym of doing double unders. It's a skipping thing. If any of the listeners do rope skipping, it's a very weird but super cool thing. But essentially, you try to do double unders and you try to get to 100 double unders. And I was stuck at whatever, 78 or something for a year, and I didn't know how to go past that mark. And that book essentially helped me do it. So I realized that's a really good approach to learning anything. And it talks a lot about deliberate practice, essentially, that it's not about 10,000 hours, because you can be stuck at the same job for many, many years and do exactly the same thing and never learn anything new and never get better at what you do. Same with sports, like going for a run every day won't make you an athlete. But deliberate practice is when you struggle and when you know what exactly you're working on and perfecting that. And that's what deliberate practice is. And in sports, it will take you anywhere. But even though it didn't talk about design, but I like literally every page I read of this book, I was like, this literally is a book about design, how to be better at design, because it's all about deliberate practice. It's not about doing what you're good at. It's about struggling through what you're not good at and getting better at it. So these two books, definitely recommended.
I'm so glad you touched upon the concept of 10,000 hours. So tell us more about this legend, the myth that exists in the education, and what do you think about that in general? It's definitely not like, I read a blogger and she keeps referring to this all the time. And she says how many years that means if you're full time and if you're part time or if you're practicing once a day or something. And that's a lot of time. Can you be better without 10,000 hours?
Yeah, I think that, like, again, the book, I already forgot all the examples they're given in the book, but I think that book literally explains it so well, how it is a myth and we can get better much faster. And it's only based on literal approximation of if you do work on certain things for enough amount of time, then you get better. But the whole concept is that deliberate practice is when you suffer through something better. For something to get better. And to give an example with my rope skipping as a deliberate practice. So essentially I got to the 78 double unders and I couldn't get past it. So how to break from the habit is by a couple of things. So first, you can try pushing you to the limit in one dimension. For example, doing it much, much faster. And that will break something. So you will realize what you're doing wrong by pushing yourself to the limit. So then you can fix that thing, because usually it's the technique. So there is something wrong with your technique that stops you from getting better. But because you're stuck, you don't know what exactly is wrong. So pushing yourself to the limit shows you what breaks. And that's a great example in sports. But again, in design, kind of, I don't know, trying doing something in an hour, trying doing something like in different environment, it always shows what actually you're not doing right. And second thing is trying something completely different. So switching. That again gives you a different perspective of how to do things better. Again, I started doing more boxing. I was already doing Muay Thai, but I started building my body mass and kind of making my arms stronger.
Muay Thai as in martial arts?
Yeah, martial arts, yeah.
Wow.
I love it. It's really good. And just because I started training my arms more, that massively improved my results with rope skipping, even though I wasn't practicing it at all. So again, given a parallel with design, if you're trying to be better at UX design, trying to do more posters and graphic design and anything else that will start making, or motion design that again makes you think in a different way. So then you can apply all these things, basically builds your muscle, and then you can apply that in UX design, for example. So yeah, these are my thoughts.
There is this famous book, I totally forgot the name. I think it's by Malcolm Gladwell, and he talks about parlaying. Am I pronouncing it right? When the most successful people, they were not following the straight career path. You don't become a general by growing up from the bottom. You usually like achieve some level, then you jump to another industry, they jump to another, and you leverage all this knowledge from different industries. And watching it your own career, I can totally see how you did that, for example. So that also brings to the point that you've got to switch activities sometimes.
Oh, absolutely. I don't know if anyone listens to Tim Ferriss, and I love his podcast. And he talks a lot about how you kind of learn by switching from different things. And I forgot who the podcast was with, but the person there was talking about how his parents never pressured him to have like best grades at school, which allowed him to also do photography and other things as kind of side things. And if he was pressured to have the best grades, then he wouldn't allow all these other things to happen, which wouldn't lead him to all these next career paths. So I think this kind of being multifaceted and just trying different things always builds your skills for the future. And the future is that we don't know what professions will be valid in the future. So it's only logical now to do lots of different things and see what works and learn from different. And also it makes you less attached to the main thing that you do. So you stop being precious about your design or whatever else you're trying to achieve. And you kind of, yeah, it gives you a new perspective. In my example, I always did multiple things at the same time. So when I was at uni, I was doing 2 degrees at the same time and I had 2 full-time jobs. And it might sound insane. I slept very little and I don't know how I survived. But because of that, I was learning things at uni that I could apply straight away at work and see which one of them were complete bullshit. And literally, I could go back to my tutors and say, this doesn't exist in the industry right now. Also, I was learning things that, or I was questioning things at work that I needed to process through kind of free creative environment of student projects where you don't have restrictions. And kind of that became like such a great loop for me to learn 10 times faster than anyone else who either had a full-time job or was studying at university. And I continued that throughout my life, that I always had a full-time job and a side project, and Futureland Academy was a side project for a very long time before it became a full business and started growing beyond kind of as a side project. And I remember my colleague at my full-time job, at my last full-time job, asked me like, why can't you just focus on one thing? Is it because you fear that one thing won't work out and you just kind of, you're not serious enough about that one thing and you're trying to keep your full-time job as a safety net? And the truth is, probably part of it was that, because it's always better to have a safety net, especially if you're not born in this country, you can't just move into your parents' house if things go badly. You need money to support yourself. But at the same time, it was giving me so much space to reflect on everything I was doing and kind of constantly compare the two. And I have to say that Futureland Academy probably wouldn't have existed if I didn't have a full-time job back then and I didn't learn what I learned about leadership and managing team and talking to a lot of clients and working with much bigger budgets than I could have afforded being an independent consultant. So yeah, definitely do lots of things at the same time and kind of combine the knowledge from both. And it sometimes doesn't matter if it makes sense in the moment. I think just eventually it will make sense. So just, yeah, do what you like.
We now talk a little bit in an abstract manner, but if we go like to the very specific task, let's say there is a great product designer or good product designer who is taking your course and they want to design amazing products for iOS, let's say. And then you have your curriculum to teach them. How is that spent? Do you put them down in Adobe XD / Figma to do something? Do you have reviews or do they listen to lectures? How do you take them up to that next level?
Sure. So the programs that we run are mainly for senior designers. So they're not really that interested in learning about craft. So I personally believe that craft can be learned for free. And there are so many YouTube videos. And the best way to actually learn the craft is by doing. So by just like looking around and doing lots of side projects, you can learn craft very well. Unfortunately, what you can't learn is how to work in a team, how to build teams, how to lead, how to create strategy, because that can't exist in an abstract unless it's kind of a real thing. So these are the main challenges that we approach in our courses. So for example, UX and Product Design Week that is actually upcoming in August, it's all focused on, for example, the leadership in design, as well as UX strategy. So how to build strategy and how to upskill your team to a specific strategy, whereas the link between service design and UX design. So again, how to structure your process to make a seamless experience, how to link branding and UX, again, how to translate your brand into UX environment. So they're very non-linear topic that not necessarily about sitting in Adobe XD or Sketch or any others and drawing, but more understanding the principles behind that. And there are workshops in between, but it's mainly interacting with people who've done it very well. And there is a content too. There are masterclasses, they're pre-recorded, so you can listen to them. But also there are Q&A sections where you can ask any questions you might have, including like, I tried doing that, and this is the project I'm working on. And unfortunately, the client doesn't agree with this part of the strategy. What shall I do? And unfortunately, there is no really place to ask those questions. And that's what we essentially provide the space for you to have access to some of the best minds in the industry and ask your personal questions that you might have, as well as connect with other people who are doing the same. So you constantly learn from other people that surround you and can ask questions them as well. So it's a very non-linear learning. We are very un-course. So I wouldn't, anyone who wants to learn at OBXD, we're definitely not the place to be. Like we are not about learning the tools or how to do a beautiful layout. We are much more on a strategic level, on a leadership level, on an industry level.
One last thing for today we'd love to talk about is the actual future and the current trends, what's expecting us. Let's not talk about what's happening in the world now, but something is happening, right? And changes are happening. So how is your education process adapting, and what do you think is going to surface in the next months and years?
It's very interesting because I think predicting the future is very speculative exercise. No one knows what will happen, but it's very interesting to see what's already happening and kind of see patterns in that. So one thing that has been happening for a while now is that creative people and designers are getting to the leadership roles, which is incredible news for all of us working in design, that design is recognized by the industry, by business. And you've all seen McKinsey report and that design-led businesses outperform any other types of organizations. They have, I think, 32% better revenue growth than non-design businesses. So essentially, design is valued by the industry, which is great. So that means for all of us, there are more opportunities at a C-level. And that means we need to quickly learn about leadership and all the other things so we can actually get to the C-level. So that's one thing that is happening for all of us. On a more kind of detailed level, there is a big shift towards the planet and what does it mean for us as humans to be part of this planet. And it used to be human-centric design or user-centered design is a big focus for all creative people. And it moved to the humanity-centered design. So it's not just about the users that you're designing for, but the rest of the planet that is affected by your products and services that not necessarily are your users, and how do your products and services exist in the rest of the planet. And now it's kind of in the wider context of planet-centric design, what do we as designers and people as parts of this ecosystem bring to the world, and what do we take from the world, whether it's time, do we waste someone's time, do we waste people's time and give them more anxiety with our products and services, do we disrupt cultures and environments, what about the energy that we use. And I think one of the things that a lot of digital people don't even think about is the environmental impact of digital products. We all think paper is bad, digital is good, which is completely untrue. The actual servers, like server costs and like the energy they require right now is a big impact on global warming. And we can't ignore it. And one interesting thing that actually came out of this, I don't know if you've seen this Low Tech magazine. It's a solar-powered website, and it's only 400 kilobytes. Essentially, it's a very, very lightweight website, fully powered by solar power, which means it's quite unstable, which is, again, by design and very minimal. So they thought about the user interfaces and graphics in a way that will require the least power from the internet, from the service, from everything, and can be supported by solar. And that's quite an interesting view and the new threat for design, that not just product and industrial design will be more environmentally conscious and we'll talk about recycling and environment, but also web and digital design will suddenly become very environmental. I think that's just fascinating that we will stop, like you've probably heard that Netflix stopped HD quality in certain countries during the lockdown because everyone was streaming too much. So that required too much, again, power and network, which was very bad for the environment. While we actually don't really need HD all the time. So by having lower quality videos, by not loading all the images, we're actually helping a lot the environment. So that's quite an interesting trend. Then, not even a trend, I think that's kind of where the we are going.
If you'll allow me to interrupt you for a second, we actually have an episode on sustainable UX here. It's episode 140 with James Christie, and we have the whole conversation about doing just that, optimizing websites and stuff like that. So, dear listeners, welcome to tune in about that, on the topic.
That's so great. I missed that one. I need to listen to that because that's definitely something I would encourage everyone to investigate, and such a cool topic. I'm so glad that you already had a conversation about that. And then the next one was inclusive design, which again, nothing new. It has been happening. So I don't want even to call it a trend. It should be the norm. But it's very interesting how the industry is reacting to this. And I was just talking to Benjamin Earl Evans from Airbnb. He's a product inclusion lead. And he talked about biases in our digital products and how we design for biases and how we can create teams and products that will stop this biases from happening. So there's a lot of interesting things. And Ruby Steele, who used to work for Smart Design and has now her own consulting, talks about exception methods, essentially looking at inclusivity and extreme users as a source for inspiration. So instead of like having that as an afterthought of, okay, how can we make something accessible or inclusive, actually having that as a starting point and looking at these kind of extreme users as a source of inspiration. So that's a very, very interesting thing that again, more and more of us should, all of us should think about. And then the last thing, I suppose, that is quite interesting happening in the industry right now is, again, something that has been happening throughout our lives. And it's now we see the development of that is funny job titles and clashes of different industries. So how, I won't even mention the whole multimedia design to web design to UX design to product design kind of transformation, but there were also lots of other interesting things like CX design and service design and how this all links to essentially all other parts of design. And what's interesting, I suppose, because that goes in circles, I was reading Vivienne Westwood's biography, and she talks there how when she was growing up, music, fashion, and graphic design was the same thing. So if you did one, you kind of did all the other two. So you were probably writing songs and doing the posters and doing the t-shirts and like the outfits. It was the same culture, and no one would ever question, are you a fashion designer or a graphic designer or a musician? Like, why are you doing the three? So she was writing songs for Sex Pistols while doing the outfits and doing the posters. And that was like normal. And then that kind of stopped, and I definitely was in the era where it was very, very specialized. So are you a graphic designer? Like, what do you do? Are you that? Oh, you're a web designer. You can't do branding if you're a web designer. Like, that was very, very, very special. And your portfolio should be very specific about what you do. Don't include illustrations if you're doing design. Don't include digital if you're doing branding. Like, it was very specific what should and shouldn't be in your portfolio. And now I feel like we went back into kind of this loop of you should be multidisciplinary if you want to progress in your career. You should at least be curious about other parts of design, not just being stuck in whether it's branding or UX. You should think of service design as a kind of bigger part of ecosystem. You should understand brands and branding, even if you're a UX designer. So again, how these things are linked. And there always will be people who specialize, and they will be just kind of in a very, very narrow niche and very good at it. But as a general advice, it's good to be curious about how all these things are linked. And now we see more and more people who work in that kind of borderline between service design and UX and customer experience and branding, which is quite interesting.
Thanks so much for your insights today, Katerina. We really need to wrap up. I wish we had another hour to talk about this. So if people want to know more about you, read more of your writing and everything, where can find you online?
Sure. So if you want to follow what FutureLearn Academy does, and we share a lot of insights from the industry and from our own experiences, definitely follow us on Instagram. We are at Future London Academy, and we also have Instagram live interviews with lots of great people in the industry. So definitely tune in. We also on all the other networks. We're on LinkedIn, FutureLearn Academy, on YouTube. We have lots of interviews on YouTube, and we have a podcast called Creative Capes. So check out that as well. And we recently on TikTok, we are now on TikTok as well. If any of your listeners are on TikTok, follow us on TikTok via Future London Academy there. Personally, and also the website, futurelearnacademy.co.uk. if you want to hear more about this executive program for design leaders, it's bauhaus.futurelandacademy.co.uk, because it was inspired by Bauhaus. Another separate story, how cool that is. And if you want to follow me, Google Ekaterina Solovina. My name is super difficult to pronounce, but I'm sure it will be in show notes. But I'm on Instagram, I'm on LinkedIn, follow me there, and happy to connect, answer questions. If you're ever in London, come for a coffee. Love meeting new people. So definitely, yeah.
Thanks so much for your time, and I hope your school grows and everything. It's just the future brings the best to the area of design education.
Oh, thank you so much, Jane. Thanks for having me, and thanks for great questions. And I wish we could talk forever, but thanks for having me. It was my pleasure.
Awesome. Have a wonderful rest of your week.
Okay, bye.